If I'm one of the models today shooting this many looks and I'm working three times this week, as is everyone else, like where are all these clothes going? And I can't believe that that amount of clothing was being sold.
We have been joined by the super stylish, super sustainable advocates, the twindom, that is Brett and Scott Stanyland. And we're going to talk about sustainability and innovation within the fashion industry.
We were just walking down the street one day and a woman stopped us and asked us if we were models. Turns out that she was the founder of a big agency and invited us in, and literally within a couple of weeks we were working.
There was one point where we said, look, we don't really want to do any fast fashion, whether it's e-com or campaigns, regardless of how much money it was or where it was shot and all of that glitz and glam that they tie you in with. Our agent kind of turned around and said, see you later.
Literally overnight, we realised we were signing up for less work, signing up for less money.
You are disruptors, absolutely.
I think we need to get away from the hyper-consumerism of what we're known fashion for being like today.
There's definitely a generation of designers who are about our age who are like, I want a brand that's going to be better, do things more responsibly.
We've seen a few digital influencers pop up, not ungendered, but like more female gendered looking avatar, and the person behind that avatar is a white man.
It is definitely that worry about that male gaze.
Yeah,
like, are we going backwards whilst the technology is advancing? A model, content creator, what advice would you give them?
If you grow up wanting to be an influencer, it's such a toxic mindset to be in. You're always going to be chasing next. I've got 100k, I need a million followers. That girl's doing that, that guy's doing that. So make sure you love it.
So, we have been joined by the super stylish, super sustainable advocates, the twindom, that is Brett and Scott Stanyland. You are both setting the bar for the most stylish activists that I've seen, actually, so I just want to say that. But I'm so excited to have you here, and we're going to talk about sustainability and innovation within the fashion industry, particularly excited because you're such significant voices in the industry, so, and you're also my friends, so that's great. You're not scared to say the right thing, even if it goes against what's deemed on trend and fashionable. You say your truth, and that is something coming from fashion models that make a living out of, you know, doing what you do. So total respect there. I was just trying to think actually today, like when we first met.
I don't even know. It might have been on a dog walk or something.
A dog walk. Okay, so
could
not a fashion catwalk.
No,
a
not
dog
on a
walk.
Runway,
so the less glamorous.
Every moment's a runway moment.
Oh yeah, I know. I guess it is life's catwalk, a dog walk. You can't leave the house now without trying to, you know.
You've got to serve a fit all the time.
Yeah. I know, God forbid. But I guess let's start from the very beginning anyway. Here to talk about you both. Want to know, how did you get into the industry? And, you know, why are you so passionate about sustainability and sending the right message?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a difficult question. People say, oh, how do I do what you do? Or how do I get into this? And we completely, like, very luckily and fortuitously landed on our feet. Scott, we actually call Delboy because he does that in everything he does. But, we were just walking down the street one day and a woman stopped us and asked us if we were models. And we were like, no. And she was like, but you look like a young Patrick Swayze. I was like, well, that's nice because he's dead. But then, or like a young Kurt Russell. I'm like Googling who Kurt Russell is. But yeah, it turns out that she was the founder of a big agency and invited us in. And literally within a couple of weeks, we were working. And at the time, we were both at university. So it was like a really welcomed like change, something we'd never even imagined before that. And of course, growing up in Derby, no one really looks at the fashion industry and thinks, oh yeah, I can do that. I think there's Vivian Westwood and Paul Smith down the road, and that is literally anyone who people have heard of, that's it.
Yeah, it wasn't like we were super interested in fashion even then, really. Like first couple of years of university, we cared about how we looked and how we dressed, and we were always conscious of it being twins. We didn't want to dress the same all the time and look like mum and dad had dressed us. But it wasn't like a viable career that we'd even thought about pursuing, really.
No.
Until we were deep-ended immediately after that.
We worked for a couple of years and just doing like the normal modelling jobs, doing some e-com, doing campaigns and a couple of runways. And then there was kind of like a couple pivotal moments where I think one of the times we were in a studio and I just remember looking at the amount of clothing that I was now shooting, and like there's rails, obviously we went from doing like 20 looks a day to like 40 looks a day. Mm-hmm. And then I started to notice like the quality of the clothes that we were shooting, it was going down gradually. Our dad is an engineer and we're very tactile. So the first thing I like to do is turn things inside out and look at how they're made and stuff. And we started to notice the materials were a bit crap. And that led us down a really deep rabbit hole of like, right, if I'm just one of the models today shooting this many looks, and I'm working three times this week, as is everyone else. Like, where are all these clothes going? And I can't believe that that amount of clothing was being sold. And then again, you look along like showrooms, and there's just like office cubicles and cubicles worth of clothing. Like, the whole floor is just clothing, and that's just a sample set. They're not even clothes that are being sold. So that was kind of the sparking moment for us. And luckily, our friend Richard, also we connected early on in our modeling days, and he was another person who really cares about what he does. So that kind of all came together at the right moment for us. We're like, right, I don't want to be associated with these brands anymore. And because of what I know and like the kind of self-education that we'd been on, we're like, right, let's, if we're going to do this for a career, I want to do it the right way. I want a body of work that we're proud of. And we just kind of went from there. That led down loads of other rabbit holes too.
Yeah, there was kind of a moment where the work and the job started coming in, and we were like, we don't really want to do it. And there was one point where we said, look, we don't really want to do any fast fashion, whether it's e-com or campaigns, regardless of how much money it was or where it was shot and all of that glitz and glam that they tie you in with. We just didn't want to do it anymore, because we thought, you know, people get blamed as a designer or as a brand, but models have a big role in making clothes look good so that they sell. They're like your main point of sale.
Merchandising and marketing.
Yeah. That's what your job is.
Yeah, exactly. Making clothes sell. So our agent kind of turned around and says, yeah, we don't think we're the right fit for you anymore. So see you later.
Is that actually what happened?
Yeah. It was literally one big agent that we had. We're like, well, they're our biggest client. So if you're not going to work with them, then that's it. See you later. And then this was just before lockdown, like a year or so before lockdown. And then lockdown really spiraled us into being vocal. And as much as we enjoyed being models, it was, you could be any 6'1", white, brown hair, blue eyed guy. And we kind of thought, we want to be booked because we're Brett or Scott. And it's what we stand for, as well as our appearance and our face. And as soon as a brand puts our face to something, it's kind of reassurance for a consumer that it stands for something.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a lot of responsibility in that, that I absolutely respect it. It's really refreshing to hear somebody else that's went through the same thing, because I was modeling for fast fashion brands as well, and had the same kind of clarity and like, oh my God, what is happening? Like, this is just way too much. And I didn't really know what to do. My modeling career was kind of coming to an end, so I decided to go back into education. So I did it that way. But I also had that conversation with my agency of like, I don't think I can do this anymore. And luckily, I can't believe they said that to you. Yeah. I mean, my agency was amazing, actually. They were like, no, we totally respect that. And obviously, we want you to kind of create, pave a way after modeling.
Yeah, that's nice.
You know, but I don't know why I'm surprised. Like, I think
I know,
it's
one of those things, like, you're signing up. I mean, literally overnight, we realized we were signing up for less work, signing up for less money, signing up for a lot of critique and criticism of like, oh, so you think you're better than all the other models, or oh, you think you're better than all this, that and the other. And we're like, no, it's just not me. It's just not for me. It's not who I am. And that's why there's plenty of brands where you would turn around and say, no, I don't want to do that job. It's basically a similar principle. But I think from both of us, we were really privileged in the fact that we had things to fall back on as well. So if we didn't get booked and we weren't making all of our income from modeling, we had other things we could fall back on. We were still in full-time education. Obviously, I stayed at university a long time. So we were lucky. We were very lucky. I love the fact that now you've signed up to that as well.
No, so don't. So just to clarify, Brett has got a PhD. And I'm attempting to do one. So I'm constantly complaining.
I look at you and see myself 3 years ago, and I'm just like, I'm so sorry for you.
Pain. I know, I really wish that wasn't been filmed as well as recorded. But anyway, you know, the black eyes. But no, but I mean, doing it all is amazing. And I guess, like, you know, you are disruptors, absolutely, in your own right. And okay, that's why I wanted to talk to you on here, because I feel like innovation in a way can be looked at from all different angles.
Yeah.
And a lot of things, innovation is doing things differently, and you've done it differently.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, what do you think about innovation in fashion? Like, what does it mean to you within a fashion context?
I think there's loads of different avenues, but I think usually it just takes one person to show someone else, like, we can have something that's equally fun, creative, and also responsible. We don't have to sacrifice anything really for it to be a better industry on the whole. Like whether it's showing you that you can have a modeling career that's successful, but you've worked for responsible brands and you're part of them telling a story that's meaningful, whether you're a designer doing things differently, making stuff out of waste, or a fashion rental platform, all of these things are innovative. Usually it takes someone to start and lead the way, and then the rest of the industry are like, oh, we can have this, but just a more responsible version.
There's so many different types of innovation in fashion as well. I think over the last few years, since like the sustainability trend has boomed a lot, there's still been some amazing things. Like even, I always think my favorite types of innovation are business models, because I think we need to get away from the hyper-consumerism of what we're known fashion for being like today. And so seeing rental or, you know, subscription models and all of those sorts of different types of businesses come up to help people consume less and buy less is really cool innovation. And fabric as well. We've seen some unbelievable fabric innovation. Like people growing fabrics in labs from petri dishes that is like a living, breathable enzyme that they've weaved into a garment.
That sequesters
carbon. That takes carbon out of the atmosphere. Or just like loads of innovation within leather as well, like the Myco and the Mycelium, the Pinatex, all of these leather alternatives, which are, they're still in their early phases of development. We've been doing leather for so, so many years. And there's a caveat, like one's better than the other at the moment. This is better for this and that. But it's same with like electric cars. It's like 5 years old. The technology is super new compared to a 100-year-old industry. So I think that's only going to get better and better. And it's I always think for us as like storytellers is probably the nicest thing we get called. It's such a nice thing to tell people about. As soon as people go, oh, this is nice, where's it from? And you're like, right, sit down. I've got a massive long story to tell you about this.
To 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I love that though. I mean, the material innovation blows my mind. Obviously, you know, fashion rental is my area. Like we've got loan hoods and stuff, but yeah, the stuff in material innovation, it's just, I mean, that's science and
I love something nerdy stuff.
I like the fact that we can have like super nerdy laboratory based people doing material innovation and also just really frugal, thrifty people who are also doing material innovation on two different ends of the spectrum, all with the same basically like the same goal.
The same
just to make stuff better, which is great.
So you just came back from Fashion Week. Well done for making it here. So what was there anything that excited you, impressed you? Any brands doing anything differently?
There's I wrote about this in one of my roundups, and the thing that's going to stick out to me from this Fashion Week is from Brioni and something they were doing there. So Brioni, for those who might not know, are basically, for me, they're the epitome of luxury tailoring. They are like the top of the chain.
They made like a gold suit for Quavo, like out of gold thread. And the only other client for that is the Pope.
Yeah.
So like, it's like insane level.
So they make crazy.
Yeah, suits. Yeah. Really accessible.
I remember walking into the last to the presentation we just did, and they were like, oh, so this is a Vicuna bomber jacket. It's the most expensive piece in the whole collection. And I just know it probably starts at about 50K. The main thing that I found from that presentation is there was this tuxedo jacket. They do lots of red carpet dressing. So basically the pièce de résistance in that collection was this tuxedo jacket that was made entirely from upcycling looks from their previous collections. Over 130 different pieces went into making this, and that was on its own podium as the piece
spotlight
from this
piece,
collection
yeah.
right. And when I spoke to the designer, it was all about this story, which was really like a proper Italian fairy tale of a boy in like the 15th century called Arlecchino. And he went to a school, he was a very, very poor boy with just him and his mom. And he'd gone to school, and the school were having a party the next day. And all the other kids were really excited. They all come from like decent families, and they're all talking about what clothes and what outfits they're all gonna wear. And this made the boy really sad, because obviously he couldn't like dress himself for the party. And all the other children saw that how sad it made him, and each gave his mother one square from their own costumes. And his mother overnight made a new outfit, gave it to Arlecchino in the morning of the party. He wore it to the costume party, and it was the most beautiful look. Everyone agreed it was the most beautiful look. And so Norbert at Brioni had taken this story and basically incorporated it into his collection. Yeah. But for me, that's like, when we talk about sustainability now, a lot of the things we talk about is just growing up working class and being thrifty and like frugal and making things last and fixing stuff. Now that's called sustainability. Usually it's just called being poor. Yeah. But he'd taken this story, and not only was it something that they'd done, but it was also the best thing that they'd done. So when we talk about, you know, how do you make sustainability cool? I'm like, it's not the fact that it's sustainable that it's cool. It's the fact that it's just cool, first and foremost. Yeah, it's amazing. It's beautiful. Yeah. It so happens to be sustainable.
Yeah.
And for Brioni and like this collection, for them to do that, puts sustainability right at the top of the chain alongside all the other looks as well. For me, that's like a really, really good positive thing for the industry, because then everyone else can say, oh, they're doing something that's, you know, regarded as responsible. We can all do that too. Yeah. And it can be the best thing that we show.
There was some cool, it's Couture Week now as well, which is literally just finished now. But Peter Mullier Alaya did that merino wool collection. But at the start of fashion, what you do, Pitti in Florence, which is like the old school trade show. So it's like for fabric nerds and textile. And there's like 200 plus vendors that all do stuff within menswear. But it's just like a showcase of loads of heritage and loads of sustainability elements that they're like, why do you call that sustainability? It's just something we've always done. We've always known where our mill is and all of that sort of stuff. But the Alaya stuff was amazing as well.
I mean, there's so much in that that I just want to like touch upon. I mean, the fact that I love the fact that the positivity that you bring to sustainability. I mean, you definitely bring people down when they need to be. But you know, it's inspiring and it's positive. And I think, you know, often sustainability has been met with kind of, oh, it's really limiting and it provides restrictions and I need to abide by all these rules and like regulations. But actually,
I feel like that breeds creativity.
Yeah.
Like creativity comes from restriction. And it's like, right, this is like upcycling and making stuff from dead stock. You're limited with materials. You can't just get more dead stock. So for me, that's an opportunity for a designer to really get their head together and say, right, what can we do with this?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a great place to start, because if you have an abundance of stuff, you're kind of like, oh, well, we can do anything we want with this.
Yeah.
And it also kind of ties into that, well, you know, overproduction and overconsumption stuff. We can do anything we want. We've got everything we need. So let's just make loads of stuff.
Do you definitely see more of this type of way of looking at fashion that, you know, take you back to when you decided enough is enough, we can't go in this direction anymore, we can't work? Do you think, can you see it on the rise? Can you see more designers approaching fashion in this way, like stripping things back, doing things how they always were done, which is suddenly innovative, but it's not.
Yeah,
weirdly, like from doing one of the first circuits we did like 4 or 5 years ago when we did the first full circuit, I think collections are getting shorter. Like we notice runway shows are less long and you're not sat there so much like, oh my God, there's more looks coming out, apart from the odd couple that we know very well. But I think designers are now really aware of their impact, especially runway show, people that do runways. They want to make stuff out of old stuff much, much more than they did when we first started doing it. And you've got like Ed Crutchley and Nicholas Daly and like really cool designers here that just love making fun, funky, cool things. And I think by going into archive, I think people that are at the luxury end call it archive. So they'll go back into their archive and reimagine stuff. Designers do that out of dead stock or offcuts and all of that sort of stuff. But I think the luxury brand it is, we've gone into our archive and we found this and this, but it's actually a really good sustainability story that they don't really push on too much.
Yeah, I think when we started, we both thought we were very alone with what we were doing. There was a very small community of us. And I didn't think we were wrong. And I wasn't really, there were some days we were deterred from what we'd done. But at the same time, I thought we're just early, we're not wrong. Mm. And looking at going to runway shows and collections then, it was just like, here's my new collection, here's some more clothes, it's
but
this
then
design.
Bethany Williams and Bianca Saunders and slowly, like really good London designers started coming up.
There's definitely a generation of designers who are about our age, a little bit younger and older, who are like, I want a brand that's going to be better, do things more responsibly, which are really cool and creative. And then those designers now you're seeing starting to infiltrate massive global brands like Glenn Martin's at Diesel, went in straight away and wants to change how Diesel operate with their denim. Equally, there's like Marine Serre, who people just think it's cool and it's really good and
they don't
got loads
how
of popularity.
Sustainability was,
they don't realize that she wants to talk about degrowth, and they don't realize that her last show, I think one last year, she put 8 meter columns of waste in the runway show, and the whole show was all upcycled, even using cutlery to make jewellery. There was denim, tote bags and something else just like piled around the runway show. So all the audience was surrounded by it too. And it was like these really strong storytelling aspects surround the audience, and you go home thinking, Jesus, there is a lot of crap around, isn't there? like, it's just such a good thing to see, especially such a like renowned global brand. Yeah. So I'm definitely in a more positive mindset than I probably was a couple of years ago.
But I am glad that you're honest and say how like alone you feel. Yeah. There is this kind of, you know, with fashion, it's about imitation versus individualism, isn't it? You're always wanting to be individual, but really you always want to imitate and be part of the crowd. So like, you know, standing outside of that is always going to be a bit of a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're absolutely not alone, because there's so many more people like coming about because of you guys, like, you know, driving that narrative. On a less positive note.
Yeah, here we go.
I want the dirt. Yeah. No. What really gets you back up, and what should consumers know? Is there any like tips that you could give them to be like?
We did a campaign with Walmart a couple of months ago, like last year, about fabric and like what people use to describe fabric on e-com and websites in marketing. And it's things like silky or fleecy and vegan.
Blended t-shirt.
Blended. And so like, when there's a lack of clarity around the composition, kills me. Like vegan leather hurts me a lot. It's just plastic, it's polyester or polyurethane. It's not really vegan, because you've destroyed some sort of ecosystem drilling for oil first. So is it really vegan? Because you've killed something somewhere. The fleecy elements silky and
stuff
knit.
Like knit.
But I always think if there's a blend garment, so if it's like wool blend, wool has to be the
dominating
material. It can't be 80% polyester, 4% wool, and then a mixture of things. It has to be the predominant fabric in that garment. And so unless there's laws come in that say you can only use blend in these circumstances, then people are just buying plastic thinking it's wool.
I think in general, Shein just get my back up, like full stop.
I know. Your broadcast channel is hilarious. But not hilarious, it's horrible. But it's like,
it's,
you know,
just Timu are giving them a run
Timu,
for the money though.
Oh God. Is it Timu? Timu
Pookie.
Yeah, where did they come from?
Yeah, that one's quite scary as well. Like whenever I do research into doing a video, you just know Timu are going to like prop up somewhere with some even worse.
They replied
stuff
to my TikTok as well. Like the at Timu account replied to my TikTok about them, because they, a load of people lost their bank details on the black market after buying something from Timu. So they'd bought something and then checked their bank account like a few days later, and it had been completely depleted to like $1.
Someone lost £800 after they bought something on Timu, and it was being used to order Uber Eats.
So they'd left their bank details on Timu, and Timu had sold it, or someone had stole it from Timu's site, and they were just using it willy-nilly.
Things like that annoy me, because whenever I talk about Shein, Timu, Boohoo, you get all this whataboutism about, well, you know, they're all the same, so I'm just going to buy what I can find and what's easy for me. Or the other thing that really frustrates me is this like perfectionism that's required from us, because we talk about these issues. So our lives must be absolutely perfect if we're ever going to talk down about a brand or another person, which is super frustrating, because we all have different accessibility points and we have different access to what we can do with our lives. And I just, that sort of stuff is what deterred people from vegetarianism or veganism, because there was this kind of hostile environment.
Perfect,
like, if you can't do it perfect, you shouldn't be talking about it at all. Which frustrates the hell out of me, because I think we can all do something, if little or big, we can all do something. And that's the community we need to kind of gather. Something I noticed coming home from that show I did a couple of years ago, oh my life, the pressure on me to have an absolutely perfect life was crazy, from how I get to work, the food I eat, just anything that I did day to day.
Yeah.
If it wasn't right, someone jumped down my throat.
People can't wait to trip you up.
Yeah, but we all love fashion. We all want fashion to exist. It's not going away.
Yeah.
You know, we still want to consume it. We still want to love it. So why can't we enjoy it but do things in a better way and just consider? It's just considering, isn't it? Because we all make mistakes. I'm sure you've made mistakes and, you know, you, where you think, oh, actually, I should have thought about that or done that. But, you know, it is about just trying.
We're all on a journey as well. I say this like, I'm harsh to some brands, I'm more forgiving for others. If I think they're on a journey, then we can accept that.
Yeah.
The same with people too. We're all on a journey. I'm still learning every single day more things about the industry. It's just, I don't know. There's this one quote that really sticks in my mind from the creator of Black Mirror. Is it Charlie Brooke? It was basically, he just completely went after the fashion industry, runway shows. Why is the need to all these people to travel here twice a year and do this, and the carbon from the show and blah, blah. I'm like, you work in film and television. Yeah. Like, if he was basically like, it's just something we don't need. I'm like, right, if you do that, we don't need music, we don't need film, don't need any of the creative industries, art, nothing. And what you're left with is just this completely unfulfilling life.
It does wind me up a little bit when people go after Fashion Week. Like, Zara do 52 seasons a year. That's a collection a week, or new clothes a week. Shein upload 1,000 items a day on their website. So when there's like protests or like noise around Fashion Week, I'm just like...
We've got a guest coming on the podcast series talking about the digitization of models. And given that you're models, I think it's a really good place to have this conversation and start it now. So what is your stance on this, on the digitization of models, or, you know, using AI? It's quite a digression from what we were talking about, but I think it is important to think of the future of fashion and modeling.
Yeah,
I think I find it such an interesting space because there's opportunity for so much good stuff in that realm. And it also gives people, when you think of a digital model or a digital version of yourself, being able to try on clothes and find your style and all of that sort of stuff without consuming product. I think that's an amazing opportunity there. We've seen a few digital influencers pop up as well. And when there's like seeding campaigns from like luxury brands where they give bags out or whatever the latest accessory is to all the girls and guys that do the circuits and are big influencers, then they'll make the digital version of it for a digital campaign with an avatar influencer or whatever. And I think that's really cool and interesting because it's amazing to watch. Like, the content's incredible and you wonder who is talented enough to do that. And the only thing that gets my back up is when it's a not ungendered but like more female gendered looking avatar, and the person behind that avatar is a white man. I find it really weird that that is a opportunity for someone to go into that space and create something amazing, but then the person that makes the benefit is a white guy again. Yeah. So I think there's pros and cons to both. I just wish it was, it came from a place of people who didn't have the access to go to the Gucci show or go to the runway show or be able to afford that bag that is amazingly talented digitally and can make an avatar, but also benefits from the same side of it.
It is definitely that kind of worry about that male gaze aspect coming.
Yeah,
like,
are
we going backwards whilst the technology is advancing?
There's a sticky space with like fetishization of what we see as beauty and what we see as attractive. There's certainly some instances I've seen, I think I spoke to you about it before, about like how a model was in for one day, did a little shoot, and then they've used her and basically just used her image and superimposed her using AI on loads of different body shapes and sizes and stuff. She got paid drastically less than what she would have been paid if she'd have done all the real work. So there's, again, this kind of exploitative kind of connotation with some of the work that I've seen going around. And I know from firsthand, like, budgets are getting worse and worse for models at the moment, especially the ones with fast fashion brands. So again, like, you can do a day's work for maybe £1,000. That's being used in hundreds of images of e-com, whereas if she'd have shot that, she'd have made much more money. So again, like, I don't know, I think there's a balance to be had. Also, I love models with character and personality. Like, I love being sold something by someone. Like, you really give me something, which is again why I like runway shows so much, I think. But I don't know, I kind of find myself in this middle ground. I'm not sure how to feel about some of it.
Well, also, you know, like you said at the start, you want people to like buy the product or buy into the brand because you guys like are the face of it, because you have
something authentic.
You have something to say, and people are backing that. And if it's something that's, you know, is just has no character, you said, what are you buying into? Who are you doing that? Also, my worry is that these kind of digital versions are getting used to kind of exploit the overconsumption. Like, they can shoot more and more and more.
So
a
much,
digital
so
version
much
never
more.
Tires. Yeah, so you can shoot to whenever.
You do 1,000 looks in a day.
Exactly. Easily. And how is that really reducing, you know, the way that we consume? But just kind of want to round up our chat, because I honestly could chat to you forever. I know we do on our dog walks. So, but if you were speaking to someone who wanted to enter the industry now, whether it be a designer, a model, content creator, what advice would you give them?
Make sure you love it. Like, I think people always, I think the influencer culture is like, I really want to be an influencer. And I think that's such a wrong path to go down. If you grow up wanting to be an influencer, I think it's such a toxic mindset to be in, because you're always going to be chasing next, bigger. I've got 100K, I need 1 million followers, I need this. That girl's doing that, that guy's doing that. So I think find something you love, so that whether you were, something that you would do, whether one person is listening or 1,000 people are listening, just find that one thing that you absolutely love and just keep doing it and keep doing it.
I think it's the same for designers, I think, and models. Like, have something about you that sets you apart from other people. Or at least, I think
it's a bit heavy-handed saying have a USP when we're literally twins.
I know, but we can be the same and different at the same time. I think
You're both very different.
Designers need to have something. Like, tell us a story that's different, unique, strong, and something that you believe in. Like, in the same for models, if you want to become a model, or you already are a model but you feel a bit weird about the industry, it's okay to have a voice and still be successful now, I think. And surround yourself with really good people who tell you what you need to hear, because there's lots and lots of like just yes people going around, and they're just not good for you.
I agree. And can you tell us just where to find you all? Like,
oh god, the street corners outside fast fashion houses usually.
Protesting.
That's not even funny. That's actually
that's genuinely funny.
We walked past. There was they were doing a Pretty Little Thing event near Oxford Circus, and they put like pink balloons outside, and I had my key out, and I was like, can I just that's probably where you can find me.
I walked past, Scott took a picture, I just saw three security guards from straight to the door. Like, they're not letting me in there for sure.
So maybe find you in prison.
Prison. But twin Brett and twin Scott pretty much everywhere.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us. I mean, taking a lot from today, but I think the most thing that I've taken away is just the strength of having a voice.
Yeah.
And not being scared to say things differently.
Yeah, absolutely. Stand up for something.
And we'll be behind you, like, cheering you on.
The little army.